Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
The views expressed by today's guests are the guests alone and do not reflect the views of the hosts, the host's employers, sponsors, advertisers, the station, or the network. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill. And today, our guests are Main Street Solutions Managing Principal Mike Saxel and Government Affairs Specialist Bobby Reynolds. Welcome. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Delighted to be here.
Today, we're discussing the recent election and the impact Main State elections will have both on the state of Maine and also on the federal landscape, and specifically the effect it's going to have on businesses both in Maine and across the country. Before we get into that, though, it would be great if you both could introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit more about what Main Street Solutions does. I'll start with you, Mike. Can you explain what does the managing principal of Main Street Solutions do?
Sure. So Main Street Solutions is the public affairs and public relations arm of the law firm Verrill. And I founded it about 18 years ago when I finished up as Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives. We do all sorts of things at Main Street. We run campaigns. We lobby the legislature. We work with the administration, whoever that might be. We work in Washington. We work around the country on policy issues. And we work together as a team to help clients of the law firm at Verrill succeed in the public arena.
Now, Mike, is Main Street Solutions, is it affiliated with one specific party, or does it do work on both sides of the aisle?
Oh, no, we are definitely a broad continuum of ideologies of the folks here at Main Street. We have from libertarian conservatives to liberal Democrats. We work closely together in a collegial kind of environment, but we get that the American people and the people of Maine are a very diverse bunch, and we need to be able to communicate to the people through very different lenses at any given time. So we are a diverse crowd, and we don't cater to one party or the other.
Perfect. Thank you. That's a helpful background about Main Street Solutions itself. Bobby, tell me about your role as a government affairs specialist and how you came to join Main Street Solutions.
Sure. Just a little background. I'm a Navy veteran and was a professional firefighter for 20 years in the city of Portland. Got involved with the labor movement there. I was the only Jewish Republican labor leader on the face of the planet for a long time. I no longer do that job and finished up my career and went to work for Senator Susan Collins in late 2007, worked on her 2008 campaign, then joined her federal staff, handling a broad portfolio that included Homeland Security and military affairs. Went on to run her state offices, then became her political director and was on her 2014 reelection, where we secured nearly 70% of the vote. Following that election, I spread my wings and joined the dreaded private sector. Mike was good enough to offer me a position at Main Street Solutions to try to put some meat on the federal lobbying bones there at Main Street. Since that time, I've developed a number of clients and a little niche business on varying issues, including judicial nominees, taxation, healthcare, all helping clients make the best argument they could to specific and important members of the United States Senate primarily. I've also been involved, I'm a campaign guy, so I've been involved in a number of campaigns. Did some work for Mike Bloomberg back in 2016. So I was communications director for Congressman Jared Golden in his 2018 challenge to Bruce Poliquin, where we had great success. We that an incumbent hadn't lost in that congressional district in more than 100 years, and Jared pulled off a great victory. After that, I ran the No on One campaign in March, the March referendum, which was a people's veto, and we had some really good success there, built some strong coalitions and won that vote by more than 70%. And then most recently, I've done some advising to some super PACs involved in U.S. Senate races, and I was general consultant to Congressman Golden's reelection campaign in 2020, where he really pulled the rabbit out of the hat and was one of the few Democratic freshmen from the 2018 class to win reelection in a district that Trump carried both in 2016 and again in 2020. Jared matched Trump's take in the second district and won by 6 points in a district that carried that Trump carried by 8 points. So Ben had a foot on each side of the political divide and looks to continue that work.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that background information. I think it's important for our listeners to note that this episode of HR Power Hour is being recorded on November 10th. So it's the Tuesday before it's being aired. So we do have some information, but of course, considering what the political arena looks like right now, there could be evolution between Tuesday afternoon and Saturday. But with that caveat, Mike, I mean, everyone knows that it would be so unlawyerly of me if I didn't have caveats during the course of any of these shows. But with that caveat, Mike, give me a little bit of sense as to what Maine companies and businesses can expect from a state level as to the makeup of the legislature. Did we see significant changes? Will it be status quo moving forward with very little change going into the next cycle?
So while we don't know everything that's going to happen at the federal level, well, I guess we already know what happened, but folks are taking time to figure out how to accept it. We know exactly what happened in Maine. The Maine legislature, Democrats can continue to control both chambers. The House Democrats lost some seats in the last election, but they maintained control with 80 Democrats, 67 Republicans, and four independent legislators who are unaffiliated with either party but tend to organize with the Democrats. The other neat thing about the House is that 58% of the Democratic caucus is now women, which is a huge majority and hopefully a bright trend for the future. And they're relatively young. 40% of the Democratic caucus is under the age of 40, I understand. So the Senate also remained in Democratic control, and in the Senate, Democrats picked up two seats and lost one. Former Attorney General Michael Carpenter lost an important Senate seat up north in Houlton, Maine. And Chloe Maxman, a young woman from Midcoast, Maine, defeated the Senate Republican leader Dana Dow in a tough race in Damariscotta, Newcastle area. And the Democrats won a southern coastal seat that they hadn't won for quite a long time. So the legislature is solidly Democratic. The governor, of course, is a Democrat. So I think the things we can expect are a few. I think we're going to see a huge focus on healthcare policy in Maine. I think there will be an effort to collaborate with the new Biden administration to the best of their ability and try to find innovative ways to extend access and stabilize costs in healthcare. I think you're going to see a huge focus on growing the economy and creating jobs. Obviously, we are all suffering from a COVID recession, and the idea of providing new and additional training opportunities in the state, I think, will be a huge focus. I spoke to the young man, I think, is going to be the next Speaker of the House, Ryan Fecteau, this morning, and Ryan has his eyes locked strongly on the trades and trying to serve people in Maine and try to think about how to create those educational opportunities to give young people and people who are displaced in the workforce the skills to make a good living and have a good life. So I would say those are the two major focuses of the Democratic majorities in the legislature. I expect Governor Mills will be balancing a very difficult budget. There's a $1.4 billion shortfall projected over the next 3 years. And so that's going to be a tough task to make progress in the face of financially difficult times. But I think the tradition of the Maine legislature is that Democrats and Republicans work collaboratively together. They pass budgets by 2/3, and they don't print money in the state of Maine, so they have to find consensus. And I expect them to do that.
Thanks for that, Mike. In 2019, we saw the legislature and Governor Mills sign groundbreaking legislation concerning paid leave, a leave bill that is referred to as Maine's Earned Time Off statute, in which employees can receive and use paid time off for any reason or no reason. I think at top of a lot of employers' minds is whether or not we potentially will see some form of a paid family and medical leave act. Thoughts as to whether or not this is something that could come before the legislature this session and likelihood of getting it passed and us finding ourselves in a similar situation to many states across the country with a state paid family and medical leave act provision.
I think there'll be absolutely be full-throated debate around family medical leave and on various other similar efforts. But I think that Governor Mills feels pretty proud of the legislation that they passed last year, which sort of found a balance between the interests of businesses, and that was supported by the Maine State Chamber of Commerce, and the needs of families trying to care for one another and take time off to care for a loved one or care for themselves. And so while I'm sure there will be robust debate, as there always is, on many evolving issues, I would expect the status quo to take charge for the next 2 years on family medical leave, and no big changes in that arena.
I can promise you that many of our listeners are likely breathing a sigh of relief as they currently find themselves up to their nose with information and regulations concerning how the new earned paid time off or earned paid leave statute is going to be interpreted and how they can make that work with their current policies and practices. So I imagine that we have a lot of listeners right now who are happy to hear that news, as they previously had concerns that we could find ourselves in a similar position to where the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is currently gearing up to institute and begin providing employees with state-sponsored paid family medical leave. So thank you for that, Mike.
Yeah, you bet.
With that, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
The views expressed by today's guests are the guests alone and do not reflect the views of the host's employers, sponsors, advertisers, the station, or the network. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking to Main Street Solutions Managing Principal Mike Saxel and Government Affairs Specialist Bobby Reynolds. Today we're discussing the recent election and the impact those decisions are having on the state of Maine and at the federal level, generally changes and what we can expect moving forward and how those changes are going to or potentially already have affected businesses. Prior to the break, we focused in a lot on the state of Maine itself, any changes, what we can expect in the coming legislative session. But I'd now like to turn our attention to the federal landscape. Bobby, when you were describing your past experience, it definitely sounds like a lot of work at the federal level and experience specifically with one of our current state senators. I mean, it's September, I'm pushing us back two whole months. See, then you're back in the election cycle again, and all the ads are still on television. Oh. No, it's November 10th. So, Bobby, tell me where we find ourselves right now and whether or not this is the space that we would normally find ourselves a week after the election.
It's only been a week. It seems like it's been a lot longer. I know the show is going to air a few days after we're recording here, but it does seem like it's been a lot longer than a week. Well, we find ourselves in kind of a very unique situation here nationally. Obviously, as we speak today, President Trump is not just contesting the results. He's out now claiming that the election has been stolen from him, that he actually won. He has some very, very powerful people that are agreeing with him on that. Senator Lindsey Graham has been unabashed in saying that Democrats cheated their way to this thing. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo today, on 1 week after the election, said at a press conference that they're preparing for the second term of the Trump administration. The Trump administration has forbidden any transfer of funds to help with the transition to the Biden administration. In fact, the only thing they're doing as of today is planning their budget proposal that will come out, the president's budget, in February. So as we speak today, it would seem that despite the fact that it looks like Joe Biden has a clear electoral college victory, there's a significant portion of both the administration right at the top and a significant percentage of the electorate who just at this time don't accept the fact that Joe Biden may have indeed won the election. That is going to affect us both in the near term and I think the long term. The United States Senate is back in session for the lame duck. We talked in the previous segment about Maine's budget shortfall. in excess of $1 billion. What happens in the lame duck around any stimulus spending is going to be critical for Maine. If local and state governments are not backstopped by the federal government, and certainly not backstopped before the Mills administration starts putting together the next biennial, it's going to be critical. It's going to suck up all the oxygen. It's going to cause a great deal of uncertainty on top of what was already a very uncertain landscape. And I'm not a business person. I'm not an expert about business, but I got to think that uncertainty is not good for businesses. And it may indeed make a portion of our business clientele very uncomfortable. But things could change on a moment's notice. And by the time people are listening to this on Saturday, we may have a different landscape as far as whether the election is going to be contested. What we do know, however, is our federal delegation is set and is unchanged. Both Senator Collins and Congressman Golden kind of defied the odds. Senator Collins had millions of dollars spent against, hundreds of millions of dollars spent against her, $150 million or maybe in a little bit more than that. When you total up both the Gideon campaign spending and the third parties that came into the race, it showed what you can do with a lot of money. It drove her approval ratings down from a record high of nearly 70% to where she was underwater. It looked like the race was going to be lost to Collins at one point, but just by the sheer weight of her persona and all of the goodwill that she has created in the state over her 24-year career, and the fact that she is likely to be the chair of appropriations in a couple of years if Senate Republicans retain control, saw her win what many thought was a stunning 9-point victory in a race that folks had all but said she was going to lose. That's good for Maine, I think. In a Republican-controlled Senate where Republicans only have a two-seat majority with a Democratic administration in the White House, that puts Susan Collins in a very, very powerful position. She's used to being in a position of power, but now the fact that she survived this challenge, that she has a long and warm relationship with Joe Biden as former colleagues in the Senate, and she's such a senior member. Maine is going to have influence unlike what they've had probably since George Mitchell was the majority leader. Up in the second district, Congressman Golden defied the odds. He was one of 30 freshman Democrats elected in 2018 that flipped a district that President Trump had carried in 2016. He may be the only House Democrat who prevailed in his reelection in a district that Trump carried again in 2020. Donald Trump won the second district by 8 points. Jared Golden won his race by 6 points. His raw vote take was essentially the same as Donald Trump's. But additionally, he outpolled the top of the ticket. He received 30,000 more votes in the second CD than Joe Biden did. So that means to me, 30,000 people who voted for Donald Trump also voted for Jared Golden. I think that speaks to how appealing a candidate he is and the effective job he's done in his short career in Congress. And I know I'm a little biased here. I love the guy. I worked on two of his campaigns, but I think he has a great future in this business.
All right, Bobby, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me jump in on one specific aspect for, I think, many of us who don't find ourselves consistently digging into the political sphere, especially since we only find ourselves in a presidential reelection or presidential election cycle every 4 years. You mentioned the transfer of funds kind of between outgoing administration and the new administration. I mean, in a normal or in past situations, what has that looked like? Is there money that's earmarked for this transition between the election and January 20th? Or what kind of effect could that have on both the country and potentially President-elect Biden's preparations come January?
Well, I don't think it's good. We find ourselves in a situation that certainly none of us in our lifetimes have ever faced. The elections are emotional things. People put their heart and souls into them, and sometimes it doesn't work out. Your candidate doesn't win. When George H.W. Bush lost his reelection to President Clinton in 1992, I was heartbroken. I was a strong supporter of George H.W. Bush. But what made us turn and accept the fact that we had President-elect Clinton and that a peaceful transfer of power was going to take place was the fact that George H.W. Bush told us, look, it didn't work out. He won the election fair and square. Now it's time to make this transition of power. We're going to do everything we can to make it seamless and to set the new Clinton administration up so they can have success for the country. There's a famous note that he left in the Resolute desk to President Clinton that seems like it's from another time. This is the first time, even in 2000, when we had the Bush-Gore controversy, neither of those candidates was claiming that the election was stolen from them. They contested the results, particularly in a few counties in Florida. And when the results became the results and the Supreme Court intervened and said, stop the count, George W. Bush was the president-elect and Al Gore conceded. He said in his speech, I disagree with the Supreme Court, but that's what it is. It's going to be President Bush, and we've got to do everything we can to make sure he's successful. That's not happening right now as we speak today. The Trump administration is saying they won the election. We have senior senators like Lindsey Graham saying that Democrats, the only way they can win is cheat. Ted Cruz is saying the same thing. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is, as everybody knows, made some pretty dramatic statements today. We don't know what's going to happen here. And that just pours more uncertainty on top of what was already a very uncertain business climate with the COVID recession and a very, 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 very emotional election. I think it's a certainly unprecedented. I'll go as far as to say, I think Donald Trump is being selfish. He has convinced his supporters that the election was stolen from him. I think that if he was putting this country first, he wouldn't do such a thing. And he would have a little grace and would think about the bigger picture here. But that has not been his style. And things could change by the time this is aired on Saturday, but I would bet that things aren't going to change, that he's going to continue to contest this thing, and not just contest it in the courts, but he's also going to contest it in the court of public opinion and continue to tell his supporters that he won the election and that Joe Biden is illegitimate. I don't think that Donald Trump will be in the White House on January 20th, 1 minute after noon. I think that Joe Biden will be sworn in. But as we all know, the government receives their authority from the consent of the governed. And if we have half of the population thinking that the election was stolen from Donald Trump, it's not gonna be good. I would endeavor and wish that he would do something similar to what other defeated presidential candidates have done and concede the race. But we'll see what happens. I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't think it's going to be good for this country.
Bobby, with the president-elect potentially not having access potentially to a transfer of power that is similar to what we've seen in the past, how could this adversely affect his ability to begin either creation or getting work done come January? And then generally, how does that affect businesses in your mind? I mean, I understand that we haven't seen anything like this in the past, but can, in your opinion, a president-elect hit the ground running on January 20th if the outgoing president has refused to share information or access to senior leaders?
It is definitely going to hamstring the incoming administration. I mean, the executive branch is vast. We talk about all the different departments setting up what the president's budget that has to get submitted rather early on. It's hard to fathom that this is occurring, but it's also hard to even anticipate how damaging it's going to be, because you just can't imagine that something like this would occur. And that's done now. If Donald Trump thinks that the election should be contested and that there was malfeasance, he has every right to do that. What he shouldn't be doing, though, is holding up the transition, and he shouldn't be inciting the populace with his rhetoric. I'm not saying that if there's credible evidence that there was illegal votes cast, that it shouldn't be adjudicated. That's different than what he's doing, though. So his actions are going to hamstring the incoming administration to a degree that we can only imagine, and hurt the country writ large.
Tony, in a normal administration right now, the designee from the incoming president's Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, or directors of various departments within the huge, vast federal government would be meeting with their counterparts that are incumbents within the administration to come up to speed on what is going on. Governing is not an easy business. It takes a lot of information, and it's not all partisan. It takes a transfer of information and goodwill in order to strengthen this democracy. And that's what we've lost, or at least we seem to have lost.
Mike, it's almost like we planned that, because that moves me right into my next segment of questions. But before we get to those, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects, or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
The views expressed by today's guests are the guests alone and do not reflect the views of the hosts, the host's employers, sponsors, advertisers, the station, or the network. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, your host. And I've been talking to Main Street Solutions Managing Principal Mike Saxel and Government Affairs Specialist Bobby Reynolds. Today, at this point in time, we've discussed the outcomes of last week's election, both the impact that it will have on the state and businesses within the state of Maine, as well as what the current federal landscape looks like. Prior to the break, Mike, you had mentioned the fact that where we find ourselves right now is in the situation where not all aspects of running a democracy are partisan in nature, but instead that there are going to be specific discussions that would be held or had between the outgoing administration and the leaders in different administrative agencies and departments, as well as representatives of President-elect Biden in this situation. Mike, I want to focus in on a couple of different situations, and Bobby, I'd also want to hear your thoughts on this, but maybe divide it up into three specific things. And the first one I'd like to focus on is a topic that we discussed on the show a few weeks ago, and that's the executive order that President Trump issued in September regarding sex and race stereotyping. We know right now that the NAACP has issued a legal challenge against that order. But when we find ourselves in a situation in which the outgoing administration and the incoming administration aren't communicating on these policy issues, how should businesses be responding to next steps in what Bobby's described as an uncertain time? I mean, do we keep with the status quo with the understanding that executive orders that are in place right now will likely be in effect come January 21st? Or should businesses have an expectation that much of this is going to be rolled back with new leadership with President-elect Biden?
Well, in reference to the specific executive order, which prevents businesses from training regarding bias and racial stereotypes and et cetera, I would expect that on January 21st, that there'll be a new executive order and that the status quo from the Trump administration will be erased, and that folks who have been worried about whether they were going to get called on the hotline and have their trainings discredited will be back in a position of certainty where they could adopt the training that they believe meets the needs of their employees. So I think that order is going away, and I think all the other orders are going away. I think the challenge is, you know, we discussed is that while we are know that that will be the ultimate result, or we pray that that will be the ultimate result and there will be a peaceful transfer of power, it is creating anxiety and uncertainty for people, you know, writ large to the populace. And so I think it will be okay, but I think it's an unnecessary confusion for people right now.
Thanks, Mike. That's helpful for our listeners who have been scratching their head as to how to proceed as a result of that executive order, specifically if they are a direct contractor with the government. I mean, in a similar vein, we're seeing recent lawsuits against the federal government and specifically against OSHA concerning their failure to offer more specific guidance, advice, and regulations concerning maintaining healthy and safe work environments for employees during the course of the current COVID pandemic. Would we expect to see more regulations under a Biden administration from both a COVID standpoint, Department of Health and Human Services, kind of all of those public health agencies providing more guidance generally to the public and businesses concerning best practices as to how to protect employees moving forward through a pandemic?
Well, I mean, just jumping in, and then I invite Bobby, of course, to comment as well. The first thing President-elect Biden did when the press and the states called the election for him is that he appointed a COVID task force of some of the most respected folks in from both Democratic and Republican administrations in the past, so that he could begin creating a roadmap for the entire country around COVID. So I think the certainty that a Biden administration will provide, especially related to COVID, is going to be an absolute contrast to the current Trump administration's approach, which is sort of go it on your own and don't believe the science. That's my perspective on it, of course, from the center left. But I think that you'll get a ton of certainty, and I think people will at least have the guidelines of how to behave in the COVID environment so we can get past this pandemic and on to growing our economy.
Bobby, if we're going to do a point counterpoint, anything to add there or any disagreements with Mike's assessment?
No, I agree with what Mike says in general about that. Again, but this comes back to Senator Collins. When you talk about labor issues or health issues, or you know the working of the bureaucracy of the different agencies within the executive branch, President-elect Biden is going to begin nominating secretaries to these varying departments. Secretary of Labor, for instance, Eugene Scalia won't stay on. These nominees all have to be confirmed, and we're going to be facing a new situation, it would seem, when it comes to the advise and consent role of the United States Senate. What we saw during recent years was it became another political football. Republicans were expected to support the nominees put forward by the Republican president. Democrats were expected to oppose them. Now we're going to have a Democratic administration that's going to be making these nominations that have to go through a Republican-controlled Senate, albeit a narrowly Republican-controlled Senate, but still a Republican-controlled Senate. This is where Senator Collins, again, is going to have a very, very significant role and perhaps an oversized role. She is an institutionalist when it comes to the United States Senate. She grew up as a staffer for Senator Bill Cohen. She was a staffer for 12 years for him and has great regards for the traditions of the Senate. And she has always viewed the advise and consent role in those traditions. It is not another election. She gives great deference to the executive. And generally on nominees, she's 80% of the way to yes. She believes that the advise and consent role is the Senate just making sure the nominee has the qualifications to perform the task. You're not just supposed to support or oppose them based on party ID. And I anticipate that she'll continue to look at her role in that regard through the same lens she always has. What is going to be different this time, though, is that groups that she used to have fairly cordial relationships with, say, for instance, environmental activist groups like the Sierra Club or the League of Conservation Voters, labor unions at the highest level that she used to be able to communicate with, they all took a decidedly anti-Collins side in this election. They were part of the effort to flip the Senate, and they knew that they had to beat Collins in order to do that. And they spent a lot of money and a lot of energy trying to defeat Susan Collins. Now they're going to have to come back and try to speak to her about these nominees. And it's going to be interesting in how they go about doing that. Again, she won't take scalps because she holds some anger towards them, but they're going to have to look for new and innovative ways to get back, you know, to a way where they can communicate their concerns. For instance, I talk about the environmental community, League of Conservation Voters, particularly when it comes to nominees that Joe Biden is going to make to critical departments that they care about, all the way up to to the Department of State, Secretary of State. They actually scored it as a bad vote because Senator Collins voted for Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. Will they still do that with the Biden administration? And are they going to want to talk to Susan Collins about any particular nominee that the President-elect Biden makes? I would submit that they're going to have to go about it a little different than they had in the past, and maybe think about first rebuilding that relationship with Senator Collins, because it would appear she's going to be there as long as she wants to be there. And she's going to have a oversized role in this narrowly Republican majority in the United States Senate.
Thank you for that, Bobby. I think that's really helpful for listeners to understand kind of where we see ourselves moving forward. We're going to take a quick break and we'll return shortly. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
The views expressed by today's guests are the guests alone and do not reflect the views of the hosts, the host's employers, sponsors, advertisers, the station, or the network. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host. And today we've been talking to Main Street Solutions Managing Partner Mike Saxell and Government Affairs Specialist Bobby Reynolds. We've spent portions of today's episode talking about changes at a state level for the state of Maine and what the legislature is going to look like in the next session. We've spent time talking about what the current federal landscape looks like and what employers can expect from certain administrative agencies in 2021, including OSHA and the OFCCP. I think we'd be remiss, gentlemen, if I didn't ask you about your thoughts on the federal stimulus. I mean, there's still almost two full months left in 2020. There's over 2 months until President-elect Joe Biden would be sworn into office. Do we expect that we're going to see a stimulus? And if so, what could employers expect to see in something like that could be helping them from a business standpoint moving forward?
Well, I think, first of all, the good news is our federal delegation in Maine are all pretty much on the same page when it comes to a stimulus. They believe a stimulus needs to go forward during the lame duck. I believe they all support direct payments to individuals. They support plussing up the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, that's helping small businesses, maybe with some changes. They certainly all support added money to help our frontline workers on the COVID fight. The question again, though, is what does this controversy, this unusual situation that we find ourselves in when it comes to the Trump administration and their position that they won the election and that it was stolen from them, if Biden is going to be elected president, what does that do to the lame duck? We also have something we haven't talked about. We have a runoff on two Senate seats in Georgia that occurs on January 5th. So we have a very, very fractured body politic at the national level during this lame duck. It's going to take a concerted effort on the part of folks who want to move senators to getting together to put together a package that they ship over to the House that'll pass. And again, we just don't know what impact this controversy that's taking place around the presidential election will have on what's going on during the lame duck.
Just ripping off of Bobby quickly. I mean, I think there's every recognition in the Congress, Republican or Democrat, that having a stimulus package passed during what is a terrible time in this country is critically important during the lame duck. The question is whether the president has the capacity to focus on this and to work with the Congress effectively to bring it to fruition.
Any final thoughts, gentlemen? I mean, there's definitely, you've given, I think, all of our listeners a lot to think about and to consider as we move into the next couple of months and we move towards January 20th, and specifically as employers continue to balance, and maybe juggle is a better phrase, operating a business, dealing with COVID, and generally making sure that they have some semblance of what the next few months are going to look like. So final thoughts.
Well, for me, we've kind of been Debbie Downers here on this thing, but as a political scientist, I'm heartened by the fact that we had nearly 80% turnout here in Maine.
And we had millions more people vote in this country than have ever voted before. The most votes ever cast were for Joe Biden. The second most were for Donald Trump. It's a extraordinary experience in our democracy. And we should all be heartened by that. And let's hope that elections have consequences and that we will have a peaceful transfer of power and get on with governing.
Thank you, gentlemen, especially considering everyone laughs that my nickname is the Big Gray Cloud, Tawny the Big Gray Cloud, for you both to end it on a high and happy note, I think is wonderful. So thank you for that, and thank you for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Liz Johnston at Verrill. This year, it's been easy to get bogged down in any number of HR issues, from remote work arrangements to keeping up with state quarantine guidelines. However, especially in times when the size of your workforce may have fluctuated due to the pandemic, it's critical that you keep track of the number of employees on your roster. There are a number of state and federal laws that may affect your responsibilities and are dependent on how many people you employ. For example, under federal law, any employer who employs one or more individuals is required to comply with laws like the FLSA, the Equal Pay Act, and OSHA, but only private employers with 15 or more employees must comply with the ADA. And the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act only applies to private employers with 50 or more employees. For that reason, it's crucial to pay attention to the size of your workforce, especially if it's been shifting. If you have questions as to your legal responsibilities due to the size of your workforce, contact me or another member of Verrill's employment and labor team to discuss further.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.